The final speaker, we're going to go to Seattle, and she hosts a Thursday 1 p.m. meeting, 5 a.m. her fucking time. Yep, she gets up that early, or she doesn't sleep. I don't know. Malaya, please take as long as you need, my dear. And yeah, there she is.
Here I am, Malaya, alcoholic. Happy to be here. Thank you so much, Mark. And thank you, everyone, for doing service to make this all happen. I know a lot goes into this, and I wouldn't be here for the work of other people and for the work of all the people that went before me. So, wow. Yeah. Thank you, Bobby. And thank you, Kate. It took me a long time to go to meetings, and I kept hearing like, oh, you're going to hear your story. Look for the similarities, not the differences. And someday you'll hear your story. And one weekend workshop, I heard my story, and it came out of the mouths of two different people over the course of 3 days. And I was like, oh, what that person shared and what that person shared, it was the closest to my story when I was drinking than what I had ever heard before. And it was a good long while into my recovery that I heard my story. I heard a lot of my story today as well. So thank you for that, Bobby and Kate. I love Tasnua. I love secular recovery. I don't know where I would be without it. I also love traditional AA for many, many reasons. For one thing, I'm alive because of traditional AA. I came in on a DUI, on a deferred prosecution here in the state of Washington. I was assessed as an alcoholic. I think about it today and I'm like, why did no one bother to tell me that they thought I was alcoholic? And I hear now like, oh, if drinking causes you problems, then you might have a drinking problem. And nobody sat me down and had that conversation with me. The rub today is that I am disabled. I do have multiple chronic illnesses, one of them being Lyme disease. And I find it really, really ironic that the medication that I'm on right now is disulfiram, which is antabuse, which it was offered to me by a psychiatrist here in Seattle. I've lived here like 30 years, just over 30 years, barely. And it was that psychiatrist who offered me antabuse, but then never told me why he was suggesting that I take antabuse. Clearly now I know that I was alcoholic, but that was not explained to me. The way that it was explained to me was through this attorney. And the person that he sent me to get my this assessment from. And she broke all kind of ethical boundaries and guidelines and invited me over to her apartment on a Saturday, because first time I was a no-show, because guess what? I was hungover. Second time I was 20 minutes late. I was like, oh, let's just do it. I'll hurry through it. Oh, please, can we just do the assessment? No, it's going to be a two-hour thing. You're too late. Can't make it. But why don't you come over to my apartment on Saturday? And I did. And she 12-stepped me. And if it weren't for that woman, and I don't know her name. I know my attorney's name. I called him for years on my AA birthday every year. Thank you so much for my recovery. And I still never knew the name of this woman who 12-stepped me. She carried the message, because she too had walked in these steps just like I had. And, you know, had she not done that, I wouldn't be here. I'm convinced I'd be dead. You know, it's like dead, jail, or institutionalized. And I'm pretty confident I'd be dead. I looked at my parents, and this illness has, my family's been riddled with it. And my parents died at young ages, very unexpectedly. My mom was 39, my dad was 52. I outlived my dad when I turned 53, August 13th. And it's really something to outlive both your parents. And knowing that they both, my dad's doctor said, hey, you know, if you don't quit drinking, it's going to kill you. And he died 2 months later. And I don't want that. I want to live. Like it was mentioned before, like the consequences of drinking for me were so extraordinarily high. You know, I wouldn't just like the state assessor, I wouldn't cough to a blackout. She's like, have you ever had a blackout? Oh, no. I denied, I rationalized, I minimized. I did all the tricks and tips and things that an alcoholic does to minimize and like not be alcoholic. So she finally got me to admit to like this, a brownout. Well, I know it's a blackout, but at the time she hoodwinked me, bless her. So she got me to admit to like having a brownout. She's like, you know, where it's kind of, it's fuzzy. You remember most of it, you know, But you know, some bits of your evening might be a little bit fuzzy, and it's like, yeah, okay, you know, I've browned out before. Well, I was a blackout drunk, and I'd wake up in strange places with strange people and strange bedrooms, and I was telling, I was telling Mark the other day, I went on a cruise. He had asked me if I'd done on a cruise before. I was like, yeah, I've been on a cruise before. That was the worst fucking 14 days of my life, now I think about it. Before I even got on the cruise, the cruise line, they put us up in a hotel room in San Juan, Puerto Rico. This woman, I was my neighbor, and her drinking habits and patterns were way worse than mine, because her consequences were way higher than mine were. And I was living in Los Angeles at the time. I was like, okay, I'm going to take my friend on this cruise. And my parents had died, and you know, I was estranged from my brother. And so I took Kelly with me, and we got in a whole heap of trouble. And before we even got on the boat, it was the first night they put us up in a hotel room. I got called to the hotel room and said, you're going to have to come fetch your friend here out of the pool. So I was like, what the fuck has Kelly gotten into now? She's like buck naked in the pool, making out with some guy in the grotto. And this is at like 4 o'clock in the afternoon. So I get her, I cart her off to bed, put her to bed. She passes out. And then I'm like, well, what am I going to do? Well, I went off dancing by myself. I remember exactly what clothes I had on, like these the Capizio like dance sandals and this skirt that I had on and this like bodysuit thing. I remember dancing. I remember kind of hazy leaving the parking lot in some random car. And then the next morning I woke up on the floor of an auto parts store in San Juan, Puerto Rico, next to somebody. And I didn't know that person's name, how I got there. I was surrounded by unused condoms, and there I was. And I just remember grabbing the business card, like, oh, I hope it's this person. awkward. And then it just kept going like that, the whole 14-day cruise, you know, and it like worse and worse. And then it was worse. And then it was worse. And then it was worse. And then we just got in so much trouble that we couldn't even leave our fucking suite, or like our little cheap cabin, because we had gotten into so much trouble. You know, Kelly's off doing one thing with some old guy, and his adult children are pissed off. And then I'm reporting somebody something, but I'm on high on cocaine and totally hammered and then well into a blackout. And, you know, I could just go on and on and on about the various and sundry things that I got in trouble on a Princess Cruise line many, many years ago, like the year before I got sober. Thank fake Lord. So I came in with lots of desperation. I know that's the best way I can describe it, is like I knew that there was a different way to be, but nobody sat me down and explained it. And sometimes today I'm like, oh fuck, why didn't anybody tell me? Nobody warns you that this is going to happen when you turn 50 or you turn 40 or X, Y, and Z. You know, it's like I didn't know. I didn't have parents that sat me down, but they weren't given the tools to give me the tools to teach me things like self-esteem and like boundaries and like rules. And the only rule that I had at my dad's house was there's four of them. Don't lie, cheat, steal, or speed down Victoria. Victoria was this palm tree lined street in California where I was born and raised. And a lot of people would hit these palm trees and die. So he knew, my dad well knew that I would get drunk and drive home. And all he cared about was don't lie, cheat, steal, or speed down the street and plow into a palm tree because you might kill yourself. So yeah, I was, he even said, like, you kids weren't jerked up. You weren't raised, you were jerked up. And it's true. It's so true. And today I love my parents. I'm grateful for my parents and all the stuff that they didn't teach me. It's like, I have compassion for them because like they didn't get taught that stuff either. I always knew in my knower that I knew somehow, some way that there was an easier, softer way. There was another way that I could be on the planet and not be so fucking miserable. with who I was. It wasn't that I was miserable about other people or places or things. It was up here in my head because I had a very extremely harsh inner critic. I had no self-esteem. I had no, you know, like a lot of women talk within the program and they talk about, oh, you know, like, I don't want to be an egomaniac. And it's like, look, when I came in, I had no ego. I needed a fucking ego. And then I'm reminded about the time when AA came of age. It was like, yeah, you know, I think of Mad Men and, you know, Beryl and Dr. Bob. And it's like, yeah, they might have needed an ego beat down and, you know, some things that were told to them in a way that, you know, I just didn't need to be torn down to get built back up again. I'd already been torn down. I had already been traumatized over and over and over and over again, from like medical trauma to, just every 6 ways to Sunday kinds of trauma. And that was the hole I was trying to fill, was like this vacant space of like no power or control, or thinking I had no power and control over my thoughts or my actions. And, you know, there's this, that saying that some of you have probably heard many times, some of you may have not heard it, where one drink's too many and 1,000's not enough. And I didn't understand that for a long time in AA. And I finally got it, that I am powerless over the first drink. I can't drink successfully. I can't drink like normal people. I just can't. I don't want anything to do with it. And thankfully for me, when I quit drinking, the obsession was lifted and I did not have cravings to drink alcohol. I had a lot of fucking free time on my hands and I did stupid shit, like watch CNN news, the whole day's news every half hour. And my little game was to see what the new news was every half hour. And then I would watch infomercials well into like 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning and chain smoke. And yes, I brought Jose Bear's secret hair at 2 o'clock in the morning. I spent $125 when I didn't have that, just on fucking hair extensions, essentially, that I never used. I ended up throwing them away because I was too shame filled that I bought something that I had no business buying, nor did I need it. You know, that's just stupid shit that I did, because nobody told me any different. So yeah, that was a lot of free time that I had on my hands. Speaking of getting torn down and getting built back up again, I was thinking yesterday about today, and thinking about how I bought a ticket to go to, because I can fall in love with anything for 5 seconds, the first 5 seconds. So I heard about this Landmark Education thing. I'm like, oh yes, I'm in it. I'm going to pay for this thing. I'm going to go to it because it's awesome. And so-and-so's told me it's awesome and I want to be a better person. So I signed up for it. And I was like, okay, what is this thing? And sure as shit, it was like, I don't know if it's gotten different or if it's changed now, but it was very much, from what I heard, tear you down so they can build you back up again. And I'm so proud of myself to this day that I called them up and said, I'd like a refund, please. I'm not going to this. And I told them why. And they tried to talk me out of it. And I got a refund. And that was like one little thing that was like, yeah, well done, M. That's what I call myself. Well done, M. You know, like I spoke up for myself. Nobody taught me to do that, but something inside of me, you know, I intuitively know how to handle situations that used to baffle me today. So all the promises have come true for me in recovery. And that's from doing the steps, and that's from having a sponsor who has a sponsor, and from sponsorship. And I haven't always sponsored. I haven't always had a sponsor. I haven't always actively been working with a sponsor because multiple chronic illnesses and such. You know, I was disabled. I was homeless. I was bedridden for 7 years. And that was super traumatizing. But I just knew that there was something different and better for me. And I didn't have to be so mean to myself in this, like the harsh inner critic and the, and who are you to do this? And how come you haven't done this? And, you know, how come you have 224 browser windows open on your fucking computer, Malia? Like shit like that. That doesn't fucking matter. It doesn't matter that I have so many browser windows open on my laptop. Does that really matter today? No, it doesn't. Does it matter if I pick up a drink? Yeah, that fucking matters. Because the consequences are so high of me trying to fill that hole, that gaping wound of like, I don't know who I am. Trying to fill that up with something else that isn't designed to fill it up. booze, you know, whatever the thing is, alcohol, you know, anything to excess, anything that's not empowering. That's a word that I heard very loudly today. So yeah, I'm powerless over this first drink. So you know what? I don't pick up, even if my ass falls off. And you know, I'm on the spectrum, very, very firmly on the spectrum, ADHD. So I learned to mask my whole entire life. I hid the harsh inner critic. I hid the fact that I didn't have any self-esteem or had shitty or low self-esteem. I hid that I didn't have any confidence. People will tell me, oh, Maria, just be yourself. It's like, oh, I'm fucking awkward. I don't have any confidence. You can pick one because I don't know who I am. So my biggest goal has been to know thyself. That's what I have done in recovery. And to me, like, I'd send anyone to AA, traditional AA, with the caveat that, like, hey, you may, you know, not see yourself there. You may have a different cosmology than what's outlined in these steps, or all the God stuff, or all the powerlessness stuff, or getting on your knees, or, you know, but there are a lot of different ways to get sober today that weren't available when I got sober. So that's what I would tell anyone that is a still suffering alcoholic who doesn't know about an easier, softer way, doesn't know about abstinence or not drinking, but there's only one way to get drunk. And I know the one way to get drunk, and that's to pick up a drink. And as long as I don't pick up a drink today, I do have a snowball's chance in hell of, you know, waking up tomorrow morning in my own fucking bed. So I've probably prattled on far too long. So I'm going to wind this up and thank everyone for their service. Yeah, I'm grateful. The day is long to be here. And, you know, I've got a lot of free time today, but I have a lot of great, amazing people to spend it with. And that's all y'all. So, that's all I got. Thank you.
And thank you, Malia. Great stuff as always. Good to hear you. See you. And yeah, thank you. Thank you. Thank you.